So let me tell you about three things I think you should know about today. Mr. Trump offers a Venezuelan nothing burger, and the media just swallows it right up. Hook, line, and sinker. The woman the right in America loves to hate offers up an angry response that turns into a viral moment. What does it say? You're gonna see it. And a U.S. Congresswoman wants to meet with a Russian diplomat. We've got the good, bad, and the ugly on talks between Russia and the United States regarding Ukraine, of course. This is the Sanchez Effect. Let's do this. And hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I want to start with Venezuela, because the United States is now admitting that it is endorsing covert CIA operations. That's CIA operations in that country. And here's what's weird. The U.S. media is reacting like they're shocked. Shocked. Like, crime on a Sunday, Batman. My God. Sorry. Sorry for being such a smartass about this, but here's the point I'm trying to make. The United States has been involved in covert operations in Venezuela for like 50 years now. Duh. Are these media people stupid, or do they just want to seem to be stupid? I myself have reported for years from Miami. I've interviewed people who were CIA operatives. I still probably have their phone numbers in my phone, right? They told me about bombings, coups, fake riots, false flags, infiltrators, anti-government protests they themselves set up. And yet here we have the media in the United States reporting on this like it's the first they've ever heard of such a thing. Oh, my God. CIA in Venezuela? Are you kidding? Really? Oh, wow. Now, look at this headline. Trump confirms covert operations in Venezuela. Like, we needed Trump to tell us that this was happening, right? I mean, this one happens to be the headline from, you know, AP, the Associated Press. But I checked. Same thing everywhere. New York Times, Washington Post, Reuters, Guardian. All of them went with this same exact headline and questioned nothing. Two things here, right? I got two takeaways for you. First, do you really think the CIA needs Mr. Trump to authorize their covert operations? Seriously? Ask John Kerouac. Or ask anybody else out there with CIA gravitas who we know and have had on this show. And they're going to tell you the very same thing. No. Do most presidents just, boom, rubber stamp whatever the hell the CIA wants to do? But then those presidents deny it, of course. Absolutely. Which is in some ways why I find this that I'm about to show you somewhat absurdly refreshing.
Why did you authorize the CIA to go into Venezuela? And is there more information you can share about these strikes on the alleged...
Well, I can't do that, but I authorized for two reasons, really. Number one, they have emptied their prisons into the United States of America. They came in through the... they came in through the border. They came in because we had an open border policy. And as soon as I heard that, I said, a lot of these countries, they're not the only country, but they're the worst abuser. And they've entered their, they've allowed thousands and thousands of prisoners, mental institution, people from mental institutions, insane asylums, emptied out into the United States. We're bringing them back.
By the way, because I happen to be a journalist and I get paid for checking on what people say to see if they're true or not, I can tell you that none of what he just said is true. And you could make a case, in fact, that when it comes to Venezuelans in the United States, it's actually the complete opposite. Venezuelan entrepreneurs, rich guys who left Venezuela because of the Maduro and Chavez thing, they're a significant economic force in the United States. They're not all drug dealers and gangsters and poor people. You know, many, if not most of these people in Florida, for example, have started businesses in the United States. Venezuelans are the key reason, check, for the state of Florida pulling itself out of a real estate market slump after 2008, and they continue to be a major force in foreign real estate purchases. This is according to the U.S. News and World Report I checked this morning. They're some of the richest Venezuelans, also have significant financial ties in Miami and Fort Lauderdale, and they've contributed greatly to the South Florida business growth. Many of them are donors because they're so wealthy. They gave money to help get Mr. Trump elected. Venezuelans, these gangsters that he's now describing. So, yes, Mr. Trump got that generally wrong. God bless. But you know what else I like? And here I'm going to give Trump his props. I mean, he says it, right? Here's the difference. Most presidents would deny or lie about whatever the hell the CIA does. They would tell you, no, the CIA's not there. No, I had nothing to do with that. No, I don't even know that there is such an operation going on. Trump just comes out and says it. He says, yep, here it is. Doing it. Amazing.
Congresswoman Pelosi, are you at all concerned that the new January 6th committee will find you liable for that day? Are you at all concerned about the new January 6th committee finding you liable for that day? Why did you refuse the National Guard on January 6th?
Shut up. I did not refuse the National Guard. The president didn't send it. Why are you coming here with Republican talking points as if you're a serious journalist?
The American people want to know. We still have questions. Thank you.
Shut up. That is a Nancy Pelosi viral moment. That captures the essence of what news has become, unfortunately, in my country, in America, right? And by the way, Pelosi's right there. She's also wrong there. The fact is 9/11 is so much more complicated. It's not about her. It's not about the Republicans. It's not about the Democrats, for that matter. It's about a country that seemed to lose its way in that moment. And a lot of people who simply just didn't trust their elected officials or their media, and they acted out, right? So was Trump guilty of using that ire, right, that we saw to his advantage? Of course he was. Of course he did. This whole thing with 9/11, it's worth at some point, I hope, with the day of the storming of the Congress, it's worth a real discussion. Right? January 6th is worth a discussion. It's worth a balanced, somehow contextualized, and somehow nuanced discussion. But unfortunately, in America, none of those things are possible. They rather do that. See, that's too often television, right? Television news, run and gun, confrontational, flyover journalism for the sake of that one viral moment that will feed the next 24-hour news cycle. It's sad, it's wrong, and nobody really gains from it. But of course, the ratings monsters. So meanwhile, U.S.-Russia talks are, say the least, helter-skelter. See, one minute, there is hope on the horizon, and the next, there's dread. See what I mean by helter-skelter? It's so friggin' weird these days. In fact, take a look at this. This is a letter I wanted to show you that I saw this morning. It's a letter from a U.S. congresswoman. Her name is Ana Paulina Luna. Good for her. She talks about an upcoming meeting she's going to have with the Russian envoy in the United States, Kirill Dmitriev, because Americans need to have, she says, conversations that offer some kind of peace and trade possibilities with Russia and the United States, as President Trump has openly called for. That's what she says. Makes sense, right? Given that Russia has asked the United States for friendly relations when it comes to trade and treaties, they have. If Russia's asking for that, why not take them up on it? Why not give it a try? You would think that that would make sense, right? But while she, the congresswoman, is doing that, there's another meeting that happens to be, what a coincidence, that happens to be taking place in the United States. Check out this headline. Look at this. Ukrainian officials meeting with U.S. weapons manufacturers before Trump-Zelensky talks. So there you have it. I gave you the yin, here's the yang. Maybe that explains why it doesn't make sense to make peace with Russia. The answer: peace is not profitable, certainly not for the weapons manufacturers mentioned in that headline. And speaking of weapons manufacturers and the people that they command, let's check on Pete Hegseth. The former Fox News weekend anchor is now the U.S. Defense Secretary, though he prefers to be called War Secretary. If that isn't sufficiently braggadocious, then check out this performance.
Now, if this war does not end, if there is no path to peace in the short term, then the United States, along with our allies, will take the steps necessary to impose costs on Russia for its continued aggression. If we must take this step, the U.S. War Department stands ready to do our part in ways that only the United States can do.
Was he reading all of that? Seemed like it, right? He's a good reader, no? But who wrote it, by the way? I'm thinking, and why so serious, Batman? I mean, does he really think, by the way, that Russia is going to respond well to those types of threats? We're going to, if you don't do this, we're going to go in and do this and use our full military. And saying that at a time when the U.S. president is talking about allowing Tomahawk missiles to be shot into Russia? I mean, what does that sound like? Let's see. World War III, maybe? And maybe Russia's top diplomat, who's remaining, well, diplomatic about all of this, can somehow cure this nasty situation, this antagonism. Let's hear him out.
None of Trump's statements about Tomahawks in any way affect what we discussed in Alaska. Yes, he's under pressure. After Alaska, he went to consult as he sat with his allies in Washington. They flew there and brought Vladimir Zelensky with them. The allies do not hide the fact that they want to lead Donald Trump astray, as we say, from the path that he has determined for himself with his political instincts. We are still awaiting a concrete reaction to the outcome of the Alaska talks.
So you see what he's saying there? Remember when he and his boss, Mr. Putin, went to Alaska to try and talk to Mr. Trump and Mr. Rubio? So according to Lavrov, what he's saying there is, those talks in Alaska are not done. They're not finished yet, right? In fact, according to an interview that Lavrov just gave to Kommersant, which is Russia's daily newspaper, there's still a deal on the table, right? They're negotiating. The deal is still on the table. Lavrov says he and President Putin went to Alaska to respond to a U.S. proposal that was offered by Steve Witkoff, the envoy. Remember when he came here to Moscow, right? And Mr. Putin's message, says Mr. Lavrov, in Alaska to Mr. Trump was, Russia accepts the deal. We accept the deal that Mr. Witkoff gave, proposed to us. It sounds to me then, if Russia accepted the deal that the U.S. proposed, that the holdup is then somewhere else. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. After a short break, I'm going to be joined by some very important guests. As important it is for me to be able to have access to talk to really important world leaders, as you've seen me do when we went to Sochi and when we went to China and Beijing and when we went to Istanbul and other places. You know what else is really cool about what we're able to bring you on this particular show? I get to talk to some really important, kind, smart Americans, as we like to say. Yeah, George Papadopoulos flew in from the United States. Judge Andrew Napolitano, no less, has just flown in from the United States. They're here, and they're going to be sitting right there, and we're going to have a discussion like no other. Don't go away. This is going to get real good. So welcome back. Isn't this amazing? I want to introduce you to two friends of mine. Just to my right is George Papadopoulos. George Papadopoulos is a former foreign affairs worker. You work for Mr. Trump, right?
For Dr. Ben Carson and for Donald Trump, yes.
And you're working at Newsmax now.
Newsmax is a contributor, yes.
Yeah, and I didn't even know you've become your podcast. You know, I mean, Judge Napolitano is to his right, in case you didn't recognize it, which I'm sure you did. Because people who watch our show are very geopolitically connected. So I guarantee you, a lot of the people watching us now listen to your podcast. Wouldn't surprise you, right?
I'm very fortunate to have people who provide insight on that show, which the major networks in America, with which you're familiar, and the major cable channels in America, with which you're familiar, will not put on.
Well, you worked at Fox News.
For 24 years.
I told you I was having a conversation with Tucker about that. I was fired from cable news He was fired from cable news. You were fired from cable news. Why do we get fired from cable news in America?
Because we presented a narrative consistent with our own intellectual honesty and inconsistent with what management and its investors wanted to hear.
How have we gotten to this point? Because I still consider my craft, journalism, a very respectable and necessary profession. We need people to find truth and share it, right?
When you and I worked for Roger Ailes,
yep.
and when you worked at CNN, they wanted us to be intellectually honest. At some point, management changed. CNN management, notwithstanding the ratings you had, which were second to none,
mm-hmm.
didn't like what you said. Management at Roger left. New management decided that certain people were too controversial for them. Now, Roger, the public doesn't know who he is. He was the greatest television person in American history.
Founded Fox News.
Correct.
Yeah.
Understood what made television. Controversy and difference and intellectual honesty.
Mm-hmm.
People that run the networks and the cable channels today want everybody to say the same thing.
Exactly. Exactly. George, what do you think there's a possibility that we can get it back through programs like his and through alternative sources like what we're doing here right now?
I think alternative sources and social media are the new global public square. I think that's actually where everybody is getting their information from. People are exchanging their ideas freely on X, for example, Instagram, TikTok, watching different shows like yours, because they're tired of the establishment's narratives. They're tired of the investors and the various CEOs promulgating information that just doesn't seem to fit with reality. And that's exactly why we are booming as alternative media.
Let's talk about some of those stories that the corporate media doesn't tell you about. We could start with so many of them, but because it's close to home here, let's start with Ukraine. It seems like the American people have been fed this baloney story that Ukraine and its non-elected leader is Mother Teresa, right? And that the Russians are the bullies that just went in there for no particular reason other than just to kill people, went into that country. It's a crazy narrative, isn't it?
The narrative which you have just described in two or three sentences is the basis for all coverage in mainstream media in the United States. New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, CNN, all the other subsidiaries over at NBC.
But it's not true.
It's not true. They all say the same thing. And many of the people that are on my podcast, Judging Freedom, once were happily invited to all of those networks,
yeah.
but no longer. They want the Victoria Nuland, Lindsey Graham narrative that they're going to use Ukraine as a battering ram with which to drive Vladimir Putin from office. It's absurd.
Yeah.
And those are the voices that whisper into Donald Trump's ears every morning.
I don't think he buys it. You know Donald Trump. You work for Donald Trump. Do you think he deep down buys that narrative or is just accepting it for political expediency right now?
I think President Trump campaigned on peace, he won on peace, and he has to deliver peace. That's what he worked towards with Gaza and Israel. He's worked on it with various other issues around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think inherently he's looking to create some sort of peace agreement between Russia and Ukraine because he simply does not believe this official
then
narrative.
Then why such horrible language? I mean, this thing just this week with the Tomahawks and Mr. Hegseth, who I played a moment ago, saying if Russia doesn't stop this war, we're going to use the full force of our military. I mean, that kind of language, it's not productive. Why do they use it?
Well, rhetoric is one thing. Action is another. I want to look at President Trump's actions. I want to look at Hegseth's actions towards this conflict. What we do have is a warming up of relations. We have people like Witkoff going to Moscow and delivering proposals. We had the Alaska summit. These would have been unthinkable under the Biden administration. So we are moving towards a momentum for some sort of stabilized Russia-U.S. relationship.
You seem hopeful, and that's good. Me too, by the way. I, you know, glass half full or half empty, I'm kind of seeing it when it comes to Ukraine as a little bit half full, too.
So I'm the skunk at the garden party here. That's a very New Jersey phrase.
I can smell you from here.
Right, right. I don't believe that anything positive came from Alaska. And I say that as somebody who knows and is friends with mm-hmm. Sergei Lavrov, and who knows, and formerly was friends with President Trump. I think it was all for show. I think that President Putin came off as a world-class international leader, mm-hmm. and President Trump and Secretary Rubio came off as petty and narrow-minded.
You don't think deep down Trump really wants to do a deal with Russia? Ukraine aside, wants to improve relations with Russia.
Yes, in my opinion, he wants to reset relations with Russia, not just over Ukraine,
right?
But culturally, so that we don't have to fly here via Istanbul and Dubai.
Yeah, he wants to put a hotel
right.
in Moscow.
Correct, correct. Yeah. Economically, commercially, wants things to be united the way they once were on many, many different planes. But he is surrounded by neocons and Zionists who hate Russia. And it's based on a view of Russia that they still have going back to the old Soviet Union days, and they think things are the same. You know that's not the case. Yeah. George knows that's not the case. I know that's not the case.
That's amazing. There is, though, okay, let's move out of the United States, our country. Let's move out of Washington and let's go, but stay in the West and let's talk about Europe. And there's no finer example of what's happening with Europe when it comes to Ukraine than something that was just announced moments before we came on the air. So I want to share this with you. This is information that we just received a little while ago. We're going to play, Gene, the first cut here. This is Bortnikov. He is the director of FSB, and they have just announced. Remember those Russian fleet of planes that they used in their nuclear fleet? And all of a sudden, one day at five different air bases, they all started blowing up because drones attacked them?
Gee, I wonder who was behind that.
Well, you're about to find out. Here it is. Play the cut. This is the Director Bortnikov cut, if you could, Gene.
Under the direct supervision of British intelligence, the Ukrainian Security Service's Operation Spiderweb was carried out just before talks between Ukrainian and Russian delegations in Istanbul on June 2nd. The British ensured subsequent propaganda coverage, feeding falsehoods to the media about supposedly enormous damage being inflicted and an exclusively Ukrainian organization of the sabotage. British SAS and MI6 instructors planned a series of drone strikes against the offices and facilities of the Caspian Pipeline Consortium, whose shareholders include companies from Russia, Kazakhstan, and the United States. We have information about the British, in conjunction with Ukrainian intelligence services, preparing a sabotage operation against the Turkstream gas pipeline.
Don't you like the way these Russian guys are always so officious? You know, in the United States, they'd be like, these guys are just like, the information we have gathered, you know, they're like very officious about it. They're very believable for that sense. But wait, I can even top what he just said. Do you know when they did this? The day before the negotiations in Istanbul before Ukraine and the Russians. Wow. They were trying to sabotage.
Right. So my friends and people who come on my show, who are ex-MI6 and ex-CIA, would absolutely agree with what was just articulated. The British have no military whatsoever. They put all of their money and all of their effort and all of their best talents into the horribly reckless MI6, which does things that even the CIA doesn't want to do. I am not surprised at all that MI6 was behind this.
George, surprised?
Absolutely not. And there's actually been reports that it was the British government and British intelligence that actually helped concoct the entire Russia conspiracy situation around President Trump, his campaign, and individuals like myself, the president, General Flynn, others were actually caught up in. Some people went to prison. It threw the country in a chaotic situation. And the British continue this destabilizing behavior. And it's something that I think eventually the president will have to address.
I am absolutely fascinated. Yes, because I know American politics, obviously. You and I have been at this for a long time. I never quite understood British politics, other than the fact that my wife and I honeymooned there many, many years ago. Right. So just the other day, I had on a great guest, McKay. He's a podcaster, was explaining to me this whole business with MI6 and why they do what they do. This is the second cut on this, Gene. Can you play it for our guests?
Well, this is the British way of war now, Rick. This is not just speculation either. The British no longer have the muscle, shall we say, to do things themselves militarily via direct confrontation. They couldn't hope to directly take on the Russians on the battlefield. So they seek to do it via other means. They have been, I would argue, the leading influence on the creation of the post-2014 Maidan coup regime in Ukraine. They have been the leading influence in its the creation of its sabotage and terrorism operations inside Russia. And they have been the leading influence in pushing for more of these to happen. And what you find with the British government is it'll engage in things like assassination, bombing campaigns, sabotage operations.
To what end? What do you make of that?
Well, they still have a sort of a colonial mentality that they can export their version of government to other countries. The Americans have had that same mentality under the George W. Bush years. I agree 100% with what the gentleman just said. They don't have the military muscle, but they believe they can use their colonial attitude and their intel to kill people and to try and topple governments. To what end? I don't know.
That's a good thing you just said, to what end, because I'm thinking to myself, not that I'm trying to give props because I'm here to Russia, but it seems to me, George, like the Russians have shown a remarkable amount of restraint. What country in the world do you think would put up with a country like the UK using what is essentially terrorism, right?
Yes.
Bombing their planes, knocking out the Crimean Bridge, assassinating their generals, knocking out a railroad not too far from where we are right now. What country would allow something like that to happen without a reprisal?
Certainly the United States would not be a country that would allow that type of behavior if it was especially within its own territory or adjacent. If it was happening in Mexico and spilling over into the United States, Mexico would likely be facing a massive problem. The Russian government, along with President Putin and President Trump himself, have basically summoned tremendous restraints, especially with the Russia collusion narrative that they were trying to frame the Russian government with.
It was all a lie.
It was all a lie, but this took tremendous restraint and a statesmanlike approach by President Putin to assure that level heads prevailed and this did not spill over into an even longer conflict.
But we're told the guy's a monster. It flies in the face of that, doesn't it?
Because the same people that perpetrate these lies, whether it's MI6 and CIA or CIA's mouthpiece, the Washington Post, want us to believe that Russia is a monster. President Putin is the only mature diplomat between the two of them. He's exercised tremendous restraints. The CIA has built 20 stations in Ukraine since 2014. Those stations are showing Ukrainian troops how to locate and kill Russian troops. That puts the United States at war with Russia. President Putin is showing the restraint of a saint by not responding to that in a military way.
Then why is Trump making such aggressive comments about this? He could end this thing tomorrow. All he'd have to do is tell Ukraine, you're not getting any more weapons.
President Trump often speaks before he thinks and doesn't realize the consequences of what he said. I know, you know, the Russians are very concerned about Tomahawks. Why even say that?
Yeah.
Why even throw that in the mix when you're supposedly negotiating for peace?
Let's move to the Middle East, if we possibly can. Do you give props to President Trump for what he did in Egypt, signing this deal that seems to be great for Israel, not so great for the Palestinians, but it seems to stop the fighting and the killing?
I think what this agreement has actually done is a de facto two-state solution. I think Gaza now is going to be ensconced within the international community as some sort of peripheral state, semi-state. So actually what he has done is he's created a two-state solution. It stopped the killing, the bloodshed, which is incredibly important, and it's helping stabilize Eastern Mediterranean, which is an incredibly unstable part of the world. So at the surface level, it's actually been very beneficial, I think, to the Palestinians, not so much to the Israelis.
Can it last? Mearsheimer says no.
I think it's a fraud. The Israelis will never stop killing Palestinians. The Israelis have never lived up to a military and political commitment that they have made. I agree 100% with Professor Mearsheimer. This was just an effort to bring about temporary peace in time for the announcement about the Nobel Peace Prize. I guess they didn't tell Trump that the voting was a couple of months ago.
Are you taken aback, as I am, by the profound impact that Bibi Netanyahu and his government's killing has had on my friends, your friends, who happen to be Jewish Americans in the United States?
Yes, the Israeli government, the criminal apartheid regime of Prime Minister Netanyahu is hemorrhaging, hemorrhaging support in the United States, particularly of people under the age of 35 and 40 in both political parties. The Charlie Kirk phenomenon was about to make a dramatic and public rejection of Netanyahu right before he was murdered, but that rejection still exists in the hearts and minds of all those young people.
I've told Israeli government guests who I've had on the show that, you know, in many ways, I grew up in Miami, so I know as many Jews as you probably would know growing up in Israel. We have a large Jewish community in South Florida, and I feel bad for them. I feel like what this government has done is hurt the cause of Israel around the world and will profoundly for years to come, if not decades, as well as hurting my Jewish American friends, because wherever they go now, people associate them with what they see as a genocide. How does that not happen, George?
Perception is reality in politics. So that's rule number one. And that's why the judge laid out the facts. Generation Z, the various younger generations, the TikTok generation, are losing support for Israel in the United States. This has never happened before. And it's all because people are getting their facts from real and alternative media sources. The official narratives are no longer held hostage.
That's fascinating what you just said. What you just said is Bibi Netanyahu and others within the Zionist movement have for years, by the way, I got fired for saying this from CNN, have for years been masters of manipulating the spoken and written word in the United States.
Agreed.
Masters at it. Now it's harder for them to do it because it's not centralized anymore.
Correct.
That's kind of what you just said, right?
Because of alternative media exposing this. I often ask my guests, who controls whom? Does Trump control Netanyahu or does Netanyahu control Trump? To a person,
yeah,
it's Netanyahu controls Trump because of the vast wealth of the Zionist oligarchs in the United States. Look at Trump's friend, Mrs. Adelson, at the Knesset the other day. I thought what he said was humiliating. Why does he worship her? Because she's worth 60 times what he is.
And she said, or he said about her, and she smiled, she cares about Israel more than she cares about the United States.
That is nothing for the president of the United States of America to joke about in a foreign country.
Exactly. I thought the same thing. What are you saying? That she, a woman who gave you $109 million and her government gave you and the Republican Party $434 million, combined over $500 million, and you're joking about her wealth and joking about the fact that she likes Israel more than the United States. That's not a good-looking picture. Those optics, George, aren't good. Somebody should have said, Mr. President, don't go there.
Well, I mean, the optics were not good. And this is certainly something that, given the enormous amount of political capital that the president and his team put into this peace agreement between the Israelis and the Palestinians, he should not have gone there. But there were certainly other bona fides and wins that the president did announce during this trip. And that's something that I think he should have highlighted instead.
Yeah. And you know that this was not in the script. He just said it.
Yeah.
So there's no way they could have even known that he was going to say it. Just like he suggested that his guilty friend, Bibi Netanyahu should be pardoned. Some pardons are fabulous pardons because of what happened to the people who received them.
Right.
But at least wait for Netanyahu to get convicted first.
Yeah, you were pardoned.
I was.
Yes.
I was. I was pardoned 5 years ago.
You were railroaded first.
Oh, that's putting it mildly.
Yeah.
That's putting it absolutely mildly. And the judge here was actually one of my most ardent supporters at a time when he took a lot of heat for exposing the operation that took place against me and others. So
you were part of the whole Russia gate experience in many ways, right?
Yeah, there's one thing I want your viewers to understand. In the United States, they call this a hoax. They call it a investigation. It was not a hoax, and it was not an investigation. It was an operation. This is something that people have to finally understand. There have been five different investigations looking into exactly what transpired in those early days of the Trump administration with the Russia collusion narrative. Mm-hmm. People at the FBI have actually been sent to prison for what they did. There's an ongoing criminal investigation in the United States right now as we speak, in which the former FBI director, James Comey, has been indicted. John Brennan, the CIA director, is under criminal investigation, likely President Obama. This is the biggest political scandal that in modern American history, and we still don't have a conclusion to it.
Well, and the way the media just basically laid down for this thing and just went along with the ride.
The same mentality that targeted George and used him as an instrument for hatred of Donald Trump, that same mentality existed in the FBI, the CIA, the entire American deep state, and the American mainstream media, the same people we've been criticizing earlier in the show.
I said the other day, you know, if Russiagate actually came down to some Russian guy somewhere, who the hell knows where, spending $10,000 on Facebook entries to be critical of Hillary Clinton, then how can we go after that the way we did while the President of the United States is sitting there saying about Miriam Adelson that she gave them over $500 million and nobody questions that?
Right.
I mean, think about that, right? Those two things.
Well, if you question that in the U.S., you know what they'll say about you. The same thing they said about you.
You
hate the Jews, you're anti-Semitic.
No. Right.
We have problems with an apartheid regime that murders innocent people. Yeah. I have a problem with that.
Yeah.
The American government doesn't. Every bullet in the brain of every Palestinian baby was paid for by money borrowed in the name of the American taxpayers.
Yeah, it's funny. You should be able to criticize any government in the world, especially as an American, and not be punished for it in America more than you would be for criticizing America. Did you hear what I just said?
How about where you spent your honeymoon, where there is no freedom of speech anymore?
Yeah.
Try to wave a Palestinian flag and call for the two-state solution outside of parliament. You get arrested.
George Galloway just got stopped on the way back after coming here, and they took his, they still, I think, have his phone, and they still have his MacBook or his computer. That's crazy.
Yes.
That's what the dystopian presence that the UK unfortunately is living because of these type of draconian censorship laws and the attempt to once again control the narrative.
Let's talk a little bit about Donald Trump as a man. You both know him. He tried to hire you or interviewed you for a very important position in the United States. Tell us a little bit about that and tell us about what your impressions are of him now as the president and maybe before.
He doesn't read books. He has no central ideology. He has a short attention span. Flip side, he's very likable when you know him personally. He's very, very charming. He knows that he's likable and charming. And he believes that he can use that likability and that charm to mold history. I don't think he can. I think President Putin now knows, And our friend, Foreign Minister Lavrov, now knows that that's the Donald Trump they're confronting. Not a person who has set ideas about government and about personal freedom, but a person who has such a view of himself. He believes that the power of him as a man, as a person, can change the course of history. It won't work.
You were part of his first administration, George. That was a very different administration than what he's doing now. He seems to have a better handle, or at least more control of things this time around than he did last time.
Yes.
Well, he was on defense from day one during his first administration, exactly because of the Russia collusion narrative. Secondly, the impeachment 1.0. Impeachment 2.0, the shenanigans around January 6th, the deep state attempted to subvert him from within. So how he even managed to have any political success during his first administration, it just shows what kind of a leader he actually was. This time around, he has decided to hire the right type of personnel for the right moment in American history, including at the FBI, the CIA, DNI. Mm-hmm. People like Tulsi Gabbard will go down in history, I think, as the most consequential DNI in history. She has actually fingered President Obama is the ringleader of a government conspiracy to defraud the American people and to interfere in the 2016 election. These are the type of people that have taken these steps to correct the wrongs of the past, and they're doing the right thing right now.
I agree with you on Tulsi Gabbard. I think she's fabulous. I think, unfortunately, she's being somewhat thwarted.
I prefer the old Tulsi Gabbard to the present one. I prefer the Tulsi Gabbard that voted against the extensions of the Patriot Act, that condemned mass warrantless surveillance of the American people over which she now presides. However, to George's point, she is the only person who thinks differently there, and she's not afraid to articulate that. Your boyhood friend, who's now the Secretary of State, my former Fox colleague who calls himself the Secretary of War, they tell the president whatever they think he wants to hear, and he believes whoever's been whispering into his ear last.
Yeah. You think Marco Rubio is there because he has certain ties and they told the president that he should be there?
I do, and I think those ties are, without naming proper names, from Zionist oligarchs in the United States who've been funding him since he was a congressman.
Yeah.
Maybe even before he was a congressman in your years growing up with him.
Me and him are both Miami boys, I guess.
Yes,
hey, let's talk about something which is important, which I'm not sure. Since I've been here, I've been covering this. I had a chance to go to the to cover the Shanghai Cooperative Summit. What an experience. To see that coming together of Modi and Xi and Mr. Putin and other world leaders essentially declaring themselves as this new, very powerful union. I'm seeing this happen, guys. I'm covering it. I'm for the first time in my life, I have access to things that most of us in America don't have access to. Countries, leaders, people who are forming this new alliance,
right,
so to speak. I think it's very powerful. Do Americans even know this is happening?
No, Americans don't know this is happening. One of the reasons it's happening is because the president doesn't understand economics 101, and it's somehow he thinks that tariffs are punishing another country. They're punishing the ultimate consumer.
Yeah.
They are a sales tax, and under the Constitution, only Congress can impose taxes. If you think I'm making that up, it's two levels of court have said that. We're waiting for the Supreme Court to rule on it. That drove Modi from being a personal friend with Donald Trump and champion of trade with the United States right into the Shanghai camp.
Yeah.
And he is there for good.
You think so, too?
And it's really the BRICS versus the rest. This is something that many Americans don't know. Of course, President Trump has posted on Truth Social numerous times about the war against the dollar, the perceived war against the dollar, that if countries try to de-dollarize or trade outside of the dollar, they will be punished with tariffs. This is really our issue economically that we're facing around the world. And the relationship between the United States and Russia, in many ways, fits right into this future issue.
How do they not know that there is a huge transformational shift taking place in the world? And most Americans think multipolarity is a Spielberg movie that's coming out next month. They know nothing about
because
they should know.
The same people that we've been blasting since we started this happy interview. The mainstream media is not interested in this. I wish that my American Express card would work here in Moscow. It doesn't. Not because of any defect here, but because the American government doesn't want it to work here.
Yeah.
The Russians don't need the United States anymore in order to be economically successful. Russia has prospered since Joe Biden imposed and Donald Trump retained those hideous sanctions, which made us fly 10,000 miles out of the way just to get here.
There's something happening with that, not just with the sanctions, but you know what they're doing? They're weaponizing the dollar, and it's making people not want to then use the dollar. Seems to me, and most economists who I've spoken to have agreed with me, that that's a stupid move, that we should back off of that somehow.
I think one of the worst consequences of any punitive sanctions on Russia has been exactly what you just stated. Other countries around the world looked at the situation. They saw the frozen assets in the European Union and in the United States of Russian assets. And they said, if they can do it to Russia for not kowtowing the official line, they could do it to us in the global South. They could do it to us in South Africa, in India, in China, in Taiwan, wherever. And they said, we maybe don't want that to happen to us in case we fall out of line. And that's really why the rise of the BRICS is happening at such a very precipitous pace.
I think that's a very smart point, George. I think you're right.
I was privileged to give a lecture an introduction to the American Constitution at Moscow State University. 400 students there, all fluent in English. If I gave that lecture in Russian in the United States, no one would have understood it. But one of them stood up and said, "Why does America think it is spreading democracy?" Yeah. And I said, "America doesn't spread democracy. It spreads violence and death, whether it's the violence and death that kills human beings, like in Afghanistan and Iraq and in Ukraine, or whether it's the violence and death that kills the dollar, which is exactly what we're talking about."
Yeah. Don't you wonder sometimes that word democracy and others, I used to think they were just important terms that were easy to define, hard and fast, not so much. I'm wondering now whether it's really that smart for us to change our presidents every 4 years. I'm wondering now whether we should be in a system where people are allowed to literally bribe politicians and get away with it. I'm wondering about a lot of things that I always thought were somewhat sacrosanct. And I see countries in this part of the world now where, I'll give you an example, Mr. Putin's, I think, at 85% in terms of approval ratings. Right. And that's not a Russian poll. It's a German poll. And the Germans hate the Russians.
Well, that's because he has uplifted the standard of living for tens and tens of millions of Russians, almost single-handedly and predominantly by not kowtowing to the United States.
You guys are here, by the way, because RT is celebrating 20 years. Celebrating what is essentially free speech in the post-Soviet era, so to speak. I think they've done pretty well.
They've done very well, not just because they snagged you, my former colleague at Fox News, but because of the freedom of speech. This is a world-class, worldwide television network that believes in freedom of speech and investigative journalism. And you don't get that in America unless you kowtow to the party line.
You were hanging out in my office before this, and you and I were hanging around with producers and assistants, and we were chatting, and you were watching me as I had prepared my show. Did you see any sense that somebody was telling us, or do we have any questions here written that I had to ask you guys?
No, I saw great teamwork.
Yeah.
Yes, and I saw, we were talking about this, which is greater, love or work? The answer, he's the personification of it, love of work.
That's
you
right.
And all the people behind these cameras.
I love what I do.
Love this work.
Yeah, yeah. It's our craft. I mean, what else can be more important? I can't believe that President Biden, my president, as an American citizen, took away my ability to practice my craft as a journalist.
I thought journalists were protected by the First Amendment, and I've been lecturing on the Constitution for 50 years.
You're a constitutional lawyer, a judge in the United States. I mean, this you should find that appalling.
And it is appalling, but as we spoke in one of our many happy conversations today, nobody challenged it. No court has ruled on the constitutionality of the sanctions that impair free speech. The court would uphold the economic sanctions, but no court has ever ruled on the freedom of speech sanctions.
You wanted to say, George?
No, I was going to say that we're extremely happy to be here. This is actually my first time in Russia, in Moscow, and it's refreshing to actually see a cohesive society, clean streets, family-oriented, and God-believing. This is something that in the United States, in a city which I live in, Los Angeles, seems to have gone by, it no longer exists.
I had a German intellectual on my show recently, who was a fascinating guy. And he said, you know what we've become in the West? What the Soviets used to be. In the Soviet era and in East Germany, people weren't allowed to receive information from outside of their
country.
What the hell's going on right now in the West? You're not allowed to they banned this. They're not allowed to watch this conversation.
Correct.
And dissent is being criminalized writ large. That's really, and selective and politically motivated targeting of dissent is being normalized.
Try to wave a Palestinian flag on the campus of Columbia University. You can't anymore.
That's crazy.
Because they will lose their federal funding. That is the government evaluating the content of speech, which is expressly prohibited by the First Amendment. And as for what George said about Los Angeles, the only major city in America worse than New York is Los Angeles. Everything crazy in America starts in Los Angeles.
But how do we end up in a world where what we... Well, that's a great point, by the way. Everything crazy does come out of Los Angeles. How do we end up in a world where it's become the converse of what it was? How is it now that people on this side of the world feel freer than people on our side of the world?
Because we have the uniparty in the United States, no matter which party controls the White House or which party controls Congress. Presidents kill, wars rage, debt increases. The mentality at its core is the same. Oh, you got Nancy Pelosi saying this or Marjorie Taylor Greene saying that. Two of the most opposite people on the planet.
Right.
But by and large, on the votes that count, they all vote the same.
I think in the end, it all comes down to which government believes in the rights of its people and wants to truly do what's right so its people can live full and free lives. And I see that happening less and less in our countries, and actually more in the countries we always thought were the bad guys. Ain't that weird?
It's extremely weird, and that's really why President Putin's approval ratings are over 80%, because he is focusing on the needs of the common Russian man and woman and child. He's not focusing on endless wars, on distractions of suppressing his own people, or to basically glorify agendas that don't belong in this country, as we're seeing in the United States of America.
I don't know, George. You're starting to sound like a Putin apologist to me.
Let me tell you about George. He's an American patriot of the highest order.
Yeah, he certainly is, and he's paid the price for it.
Yes.
You guys are fantastic, man.
Thank you. Shake my hand.
Thank you for inviting us.
We're looking forward to that celebration at the Bowl Show.
Yeah, that's going to be great. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm going to dance, you know.
Yeah, you promised to introduce me to your friend, Vladimir Putin.
I hear he might make I hear he might show up. I don't know. I'm not sure. Mysterious guy that he is, we're told. Wow. Thanks, fellas. It's really great. Thanks for coming out.
Thank you, Rick.
Thanks for sharing what is incredible wisdom that oftentimes too many people don't get a chance to hear. That's why we do what we do here.
Thanks once again.
I'm honored. Well, if you have some thoughts you'd like to share after you listen to this conversation, and I'm sure you will, go to my YouTube podcast. It's called Journalistically Speaking, and we mean it. And don't hold back. Let me know what you think. Even if you think I suck, please let me know. Share it with me. I'll take the good, the bad, and the ugly. Also, I'm on X, Rick Sanchez TV. Go there. My God, that thing is blowing up lately. We've had like hundreds of thousands of people just going in and arguing and sharing ideas, and I think that's wonderful. Keep it up. Thanks so much for being here. Thanks for letting us into your homes, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.